Hi, I'm Dr. Troy Spurl, and our podcast is Synapse Snips. Our podcast teaches people about how the body is supposed to work, basically how we were innately made. Have you ever wondered why you get headaches? Ever wondered why you wake up and you just, your feet don't work in the morning and they're achy, and then as you get walking, it gets better? Have you ever wondered why you don't remember your dreams? Have you ever wondered why you're gaining weight even though you're eating right, you're exercising, and the weight keeps coming on? Have you ever wondered why you're just feeling depressed? That's hard to get up off the couch. If you ever wondered about why you feel these things and why you're not just feeling right, listen to our podcast to get the answers. We get to the root cause and we tell you why. Make sure you're listening to Synapse Snips each and every week where we answer the questions that you guys have. Also, you can find us at officialsynapse.com. That's official Synapse, SYNAPSE.com.
Hello and welcome to Synapse Snips. I'm Dr. Troy Spurl, and I'm joined today again by one of our favorites here, Dr. Ray Strand. And we are going to be talking about heart disease, cardiovascular disease, heart health, and some of the history and some of the things that have changed over the years as far as just how we've approached it. So welcome, Dr. Strand. Thanks again for joining us. We're blessed to have you.
Well, glad to be here, Troy.
Yes. So I'm going to just right away get into asking you, tell me, because I know this is your wheelhouse as far as just a lot of stuff you've been working on for many years. But tell me, let's start like way back when you first started in medicine. Tell us a little bit about heart disease back then, how prevalent it was, and then just what you saw and how it was managed from a traditional perspective.
Well, Troy, from the very beginning, we started to get the research that says that heart disease was the result of too much cholesterol in your bloodstream. But when I started medicine, what was really interesting, you'd look at your chem profiles and the lipid profiles, and the normal of cholesterol, total cholesterol at this time, was anything less than 320. Yeah. And that's where it was. And then 2 or 3 years into medical practice, this is the mid-1970s, they dropped it to 240, anything above 240. So you could kind of see it starting, this whole scenario that heart disease is a result of too much cholesterol, too much fat in the diet, the whole nine yards. Well, then along came the breakdown of cholesterol into LDL cholesterol and HDL. Well, LDL being the bad cholesterol, HDL being the good cholesterol, HDL cleaning up and LDL, increasing plaque. Well, even there, LDL cholesterol, less than 140 was considered normal, no problem. Well, then came the statin drugs, okay? And of course, lowering cholesterol was the big deal. What we had before really didn't work, but, along came Mevacor and a few of the early statins, the late 70s, and people really got excited. And so we started to see a real trend in trying to lower cholesterol significantly because, then we are going to decrease the number one cause of death in the country, in the world, which was cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, and strokes. And therefore, we've got to get it below 140. Well, what happened is the fact that it didn't help. Heart disease didn't go down. Yeah. Well, but I'll tell you, our recommendations did because what they did is then they lowered, we got to get cholesterol LDL below 120 and then below 100. So this has been the trend in medicine with all of this. So now we want to get it below 70. And so that's kind of the history, but I want to throw in, that's kind of where it started. I'll let you ask your questions and then I'll proceed.
So, I'm just going to make a comment actually, because I find it very interesting that, in the 70s, just our level of obesity and our cardiovascular health was probably a lot better than it is right now. Cause our obesity, yeah, track is quite a bit worse, and so we have more stringent cholesterol levels, but we have this obesity and all these other factors that are just so much worse. So in the grand scheme of things, how well have we done at managing cardiovascular disease since the 70s?
Well, we've been at it over half a century now, and I've been involved with it. It's really interesting. Smith, Klein, and French came out with their first statin drug, which was Mevacor. And, you know, then in about, you know, we kept doing studies and studies of, oh, this is the answer. And you want to know how we treated. I want to just, what was the treatment that we as physicians did to treat heart disease and stroke? It's very simple. A statin drug. Yeah. That was it. Once I wrote that statin drug, I was doing the best I could to help my patients. And they based it primarily in a study in 2008, which then was Crestor, because all of a sudden they came out with a claim it decreased, you know, because we can decrease cholesterol so much, it was going to decrease our risk of heart disease by 50%. Whoa, this was just, yeah. This was reported in all the literature. But it's a game with statistics. What that study showed, if you take 100 people, this is basically it, in the drug group, and then you got 100 in the placebo group. Well, in the drug group, there was one heart attack. Well, in the placebo group, there were two heart attacks. That's the true numbers.
Yeah.
So, you know, they play the game, and we can lower heart disease by 50%. However, the absolute risk reduction was 1%. And when the guys that really looked at this, so traditionally, this is it. So what, how have we done? Oh, we've lowered cholesterol to the bottom. I mean, we almost make it get, you know, they're coming out with IM drugs now, and you get shots and you do this, and we can get that LDL cholesterol below 50 and sometimes 40.
Yeah.
So what do we get? It's still the number one cause of heart disease, of death in the world.
Yep.
And if it were true, we lower cholesterol, that was the answer. Well, then we should be hardly having any heart disease. So that's kind of where we are. We've done nothing.
Yeah, I'm actually going to, I just brought up on my screen here. I'm going to share my screen here just to see here, show people a little bit of just the path, because one of the things that we see when you see cholesterol just in the upper left corner of that chart, and then you can see all the different hormones that are made from this cholesterol. So I just want people to hear that that a lot of other hormone related challenges actually come from these cholesterol lowering medications, or that we actually need cholesterol. So there's a nice fine balance, which we're going to talk about. We'll get into that. But a lot of people don't really realize that cholesterol is really, really important. And there's different forms of cholesterol. There's even more different forms of LDL and the HDL cholesterol. There's different components. So you can see here, there's cortisol, which is the stress hormone, testosterone, which is an important hormone, the estrogen. So we see that there's an actual component of needing nice hormonal balance. And so a lot of people will get on the medications, not necessarily get the impact of reduced cardiovascular disease, and end up inducing a hormone imbalance or a problem there. So just wanted to bring that part up and show people.
Well, let me add to that, Troy. What we find is that, you know, when you look back and you really look at the studies, 60 to 80% of the studies were actually done by the pharmaceutical company. This is big pharma at its best. Yep. They get to choose who they study. They got the placebo group. They've got everything in their control, and they really play with statistics. So they hype the benefit, but they suppress, like you say, they suppress the adverse reactions. And now we're starting to see a lot of things coming out. We all know about muscle pain, you know, that when, you know, most of the people have had been on statin drugs, they complain of muscle pain and the doctor switching this and this and this. Well, it's really interesting that when you block, you know, statin drugs block the production of cholesterol in the liver, but that same drug also blocks the production of CoQ10.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting fact that CoQ10 is essential for over 90% of the energy production in all muscle. Well, then what happens over time is our CoQ10 levels go down. And the first drug company, Smith, Kline, and French, knew this. And in their original patent with Mevacor, they wanted to add CoQ10 to it. And so that we wouldn't have the muscle pain. But in the end, they took it out. They didn't do it. Well, then now we're starting to realize that cognition, you know, just cognitive ability drops significantly on people who are taking statin drugs. And we double the risk of developing Alzheimer's dementia.
Yes.
I've been involved with at least two of my patients that developed Alzheimer's dementia, came in to me and was diagnosed, and they're on statin drugs, just simply took them off the statin drugs. And they both came back to normal after a year or two of being diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And this is what we see in the cognitive ability. When you go on a statin drug, the cognitive ability drops.
Yeah.
You go off the statin drug, it comes up. Now, this is something that we know. Second of all, you know, the second big thing is the fact that we know that it decreases insulin sensitivity. And what we find is that that we get insulin resistance. And what happens is we significantly increase the risk of becoming diabetic. And what we have, you know, and I've shared this, and we'll get into this later when we get into lifestyles, but Dr. Gerald Ravens, who really did this prediabetes diagnosis of back then, it was metabolic syndrome or syndrome X, they actually found that you increase your risk of heart disease and strokes by 20-fold.
Yeah.
You take a statin drug, and the real people and cardiologists are coming out saying it's only a 1%. If you give the pharmaceutical industry the benefit of the doubt, 1% decrease in your risk of heart disease, but then it causes insulin resistance or increases your risk of diabetes, prediabetes. It doesn't matter which; they both are there. And that's a 20-fold increased risk of having a heart attack and stroke. And that's, we'll get into that later. And, you know, so that is another adverse reaction. And then we find also that the other thing that we have is that we see that as you reduce CoQ10 is the most important aspect of our immune system. And you see studies now coming out 6-8 years of people on statin drugs, their risk of cancers jump up double, triple, quadruple. So those are being downplayed. At the same time, you know, everybody believes, oh, all I have to do is write a statin drug and I have done my job. So that's where we sit.
Yeah. And that like you were saying, when you have the CoQ10 issues, the cancer rates increase because CoQ10 is very important for our mitochondria health. And we've spoken about that quite a bit. And our mitochondria has a protective mechanism around, not just for energy and an overall muscle contraction, but protective mechanism for the DNA itself. So the challenge then becomes, because I do believe it's an education process, not just with the people, but even the doctors, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there hasn't been much of a deviation in the traditional approach since the 70s, with just a few exceptions. There are some cardiologists that I know regularly are prescribing CoQ10 now and omega-3 fatty acids along with the statins. Yeah. So that's the next step. But there's more to it, isn't there? There's more to that story.
Yeah, and I want to just share for people out there, you know, that are listening. If you're on a statin drug and you really wonder, gee, do I really believe all this stuff we're talking about? I find the best book. It's called A Statin Free Life. It's written by Dr. Aseem, Aseem Malhotra, Malhotra. He's one of the top leading cardiologists in the UK. And he wrote this book, and I've read it. I think I even sent you that, Troy. Yeah, but what it does, he looks at everything from a very, very unbiased situation. He just looks at it, presents it, and he agrees that if you take a statin drug, you may decrease your risk by 1%. But that's absorbing all of these adverse reactions that you got to do to take it.
Yeah.
Plus, they're expensive. Plus they go on. But here's the biggest problem is that the medical community then doesn't do anything else. They don't talk diet. They don't talk other than no fat diet, which is crazy. But what happens is that we don't look at other issues. But see, when you look at the medical literature, you know, all they do is prescribe statin drug. When you look at the medical literature, heart disease is not the result of too much cholesterol in your arteries. Yep. What it is, it's an inflammation of your arteries. And I can show you New England Journal of Medicine, British Lancet, JAMA. When I wrote my first book, I had a whole chapter that half the people who have heart attacks have normal cholesterol levels. Half the people who don't have heart attacks yes. have normal cholesterol levels. It's both. It's the normal population. Cholesterol really has nothing to do with it. And in fact, because this came out really strong in the early 2000s, what people started to say, well, maybe the benefit, which is 1% of the statin drugs, it also decreases inflammation. So it's an anti-inflammatory. And right. all the research, well, I don't know which way it works. But anyway, that's a short synopsis of where we stand today.
Yeah. So we'll dive into some of the alternative solutions for people. Before we do that, let's do a little bit of a deeper dive about if cholesterol's not the culprit, and really we call it like cholesterol's the messenger. So cholesterol is being put into play to basically counteract a reaction. So when we have something called free radicals or oxidative stress, and there's these foam cells that send a signal, and the cholesterol is just doing its job. So it's like shooting the messenger, basically, when it comes to receiving a bad message. So when you talk about inflammation, what are the different things in the blood vessel lining that can cause that inflammatory reaction? Can you throw a few of them out there?
Well, what the first original articles, and I've kind of progressed myself, but I'll go back to my original book I wrote. There are about six things, you know, hyperglycemia, you know, too much blood sugar inflames it. We know about homocysteine, which is also really a B vitamin deficiency, and we can't break it down. Increased homocysteine really inflames the arteries. Yeah. Cigarette smoke, you know, just the nicotine in that causes increased oxidative stress. Actually, a fatty meal can cause inflammation. High blood pressure can cause inflammation. Obesity sends out a lot of inflammatory products. So, you know, you start to see this whole thing. And when we talk about prediabetes, you know, what are the signs? You get central weight gain, you get elevated blood pressure, you get elevated blood sugar. You know, you get not so much the homocysteine, that's a different issue. But you can see when you're in that state, which we will talk about, that just the obesity itself increases inflammation. But then you become diabetic.
Yeah.
And then it goes off the roof. And here's the thing people have to understand. 80% of our diabetics die prematurely from a cardiovascular event, heart attack or stroke. Now, that was true in 1960, 1980, 2024. It has not changed, mainly because all of the treatment, everything we do, is done too late. We treat too late. And so what happens is by the day I diagnose a patient with diabetes in my office, 60% already have major cardiovascular disease. It's too late. I'll just tell you, we're going to hit on this, but since I'm right there, I'll try to, this is a consensus report from the American College of Endocrinology. These are the diabetes specialists in the United States got together and said, hey, we need to be treating this pre-diabetes as aggressively as we do diabetes. Yes. The reason is by the time they become diabetic, it's too late. We're not helping them. And so we need to be as aggressive treating prediabetes as we do diabetes. Well, they looked at the worldwide medical literature, Troy, and they said, well, what should we be telling physicians to do? And it wasn't drugs. Drugs aren't the answer. It's intensive lifestyle changes, which we'll get into. So, but diabetes really creates inflammation just there. And I just kind of went off a little bit on tangent, but it really puts it together. So that's what we originally know and thought was a cause of the inflammation.
Yeah, and we've had since then too, I'm going to throw out a few other ones because in the COVID era, we've also seen that the spike protein of COVID can nick and cause damage to the arteries, but even more so the vaccinations, because a lot of times when you have COVID, it has to breach the lung barrier to actually get into a circulation. So for some people, it never really fully gets into circulation, so it can't cause that inflammatory reaction with the spike protein. But when you have the vaccines, and I don't know if this is a surprise to people, but when they originally came out, they said, oh, it doesn't actually escape the cell. It's not going to get into circulation. Well, we now know that that's not true. And so the actual spike protein, can, if it enters into circulation, can cause damage to the lining of the arteries as well, or inflammation, as can heavy metals, other low-grade infections. Other viruses can, other bacteria, Lyme, parasites, small infectious organisms, a lot of the co-infections of Lyme can also be contributory. So it's very important. So our immune system becomes very important. Our barrier system becomes very important to cardiovascular all of a sudden.
Well, and that's where it is, because all the cardiovascular disease occurs in the intermedial space, you know, and so we got a one cell lining, the endothelium. And just to add to your comments about the spike disease or COVID spike protein, is it literally attaches to that one cell lining and creates an endotheliitis. The researchers are really seeing this well, and it's not just in the heart, it's throughout the body. And so neurological problems we get because it crosses the blood-brain barrier, stroke, heart attack, but it also is the cause of blood clots. And yes. And so that inflammation, we see the micro clots, but also these goofy fibrous clots that we're seeing. So yes, spike disease is a major issue for anybody, and that's, you're right in the middle of that.
Yeah, we've seen quite a bit of that, and so I'm gonna bring something up here just to share again. Let me see if I can bring it up onto the screen. And I want to just show a little bit of what we've seen. We have a specialized test here called the EndoPad. The technology comes out of Israel, but it measures your endothelial dysfunction here. And so I'm going to share that if I can here. Just want to point out one thing here. So this is where we occlude the arteries, and this gives you a little bit of an idea of the occlusion rates here. And when we have a healthy endothelial lining, it's in the green. When it's been damaged by inflammatory processes for different reasons, smoking, like you said, diet, diabetes, the vaccine or COVID itself, or some type of infection, we'll see it in this red category. And so we see a lot of that dysfunction. And we've had people that have been 50-year smokers, and they've been at this level, and then going through dietary and lifestyle changes, we're able to get them up above that 0.7 range into the healthy endothelial lining. And I know that that's going to be the future of helping these people. But in order to do it, we have to go through and help all those different areas that you just spoke about, all the things that cause the inflammation. And so figuring it out, and some people have one thing or one major thing. Some people have into the 5, 6, 7, they have all of them. And so it takes a lot longer with them, but we're actually seeing good, significant changes. And to your point, we actually have to get them off of their statin medications to get full recoveries, because we need actually balanced hormones to help aid in the healing process. Because there is a relationship of how sugar, insulin, and cortisol speak to each other. There's a relationship between cortisol and the progesterone and the testosterone, as well as the cholesterol levels themselves. And then we need the anti-inflammatories, the omega-3 oils, to make sure the arteries aren't stiff and they're actually moving properly. So can you speak to just how you transitioned from using the traditional approach into more of a lifestyle approach? Because I know you I know you don't use the traditional approach anymore.
That's correct. And even personally or anybody of my patients, I realize that statins are a sign of big pharma. You know, I wrote a book, Death by Prescription, in 2003. And that changed my mind on big pharma. We start to understand when they got $30 billion to spend each and every year on advertising, it's hard to fight City Hall. But yet again, I believe that it's lifestyle changes. It's what's got us into trouble. And that's kind of the gist of my book, Healthy for Life. But what it is reversing insulin resistance. So if I'm giving a drug that it actually increases insulin resistance, it's going to do all this. Plus, so what I've done is I have a combination. Now, this is me just as a physician. I know you're really deep into this much more than I am. But I found there's a triad of healthy lifestyles. Since it is poor lifestyles that got us into this problem, becoming less sensitive to our own insulin, seeing those blood insulin, you know, that's how the body compensates. It produces more and more insulin. And that in itself can be a risk factor causing all this hyperinsulinemia. So what I did is, well, maybe healthy lifestyles that improve insulin sensitivity could reverse this process. And that's what I've seen in my medical practice since I've made the adjustment. So I believe in eating a healthy diet, whole foods, getting away from the processed grains, the almighty white potato, those high glycemic, ones and that have a high glycemic load too, and start to balance blood sugars, because just even after a meal where you don't spike your blood sugar, insulin levels come down, but, you know, glucagon comes up, and then, but you don't spike that blood sugar and set off the hypoglycemia and the cortisol levels. So just by you find out the greatest drug you choose to take happens to be the food you choose to eat.
Yep.
And this is very critical. So eating healthy diet, even after one meal, improves insulin sensitivity if you don't spike your blood sugar. And that goes on and on. Well, then I add to that just modest exercise. This is what the medical literature shows. Just simply walking briskly 30 minutes, 5 days a week, or running, biking, hiking. It's the aerobic activity. Improves insulin sensitivity from a different mechanism. Well, then you take supplements, you know, and we study supplements one at a time, but it'll be chromium and selenium and magnesium and vitamin E, vitamin C, grapeseed extract. But all of these individual studies show they improve insulin sensitivity. And you know this, I like cellular nutrition, giving it all the essential nutrients, so you take advantage. But that improves insulin sensitivity from a different mechanism.
Yeah.
Well, in my medical practice, that really decreased inflammation, just that alone. And then you start adding, I mean, gee, you have so much neat instruments and you can see what's happening. Obviously, people have got to protect their environment, quit smoking, doing this. But what happens is blood insulin levels, we did 3 clinical trials of my program, you know, and what we found is insulin levels drop 50% in each one of these, which were under an IRB, under the direction of the FDA, 50%. Well, then as the blood insulin levels drop, blood pressure comes down, triglycerides come down, blood sugars come down. All those things we talked about that are causing inflammation. So lifestyle has become a key component. I don't worry about cholesterol. I mean, it's a non-issue to me. This is what's important, and it's for the reasons what Gerald Ravens discovered, that these, you know, your arteries just begin aging about a third faster than they should in this state. So that's what I'm doing now.
And were your patients pleasantly surprised when you started talking lifestyle, or did you have resistance?
You know, it was my feeler. I could explain that to my patients in about 2 minutes, and right. I would say 20% of my patients says, "Oh, doc, you know, just give me the meds. You know, I'm not going to change my lifestyle." 80% said, "Oh, I'd do anything to avoid drugs." I mean, so I found about an 80-20. And the thing is, I just, you know, I could practice traditional medicine with that 20%. You know, their blood pressure goes up, they become diabetic. I can write the scripts like anything. But the ones that wanted to, were pleasantly surprised. Now, Troy, I'm going to mention this. The medical community is encouraged to give the patient a trial of healthy lifestyles. That's called first step therapy before they write the statin drug. And in fact, if you look at the next statin drug that's advertised on television, you know, what do they say? Well, when diet and exercise fail, then you use our drug.
Yes.
Well, why do they do that?
Yeah.
Because the FDA approved it as second step therapy.
Yes.
But physicians give that lip service because, number one, they don't think their patients are going to make the lifestyle changes. And number two, even if they do, they won't be clinically effective. So I might just write the script to begin with. But that is what I, about an 80-20 to answer your question. It's a little long answer, but that's what I see.
And then one thing we didn't touch on that I want people to really hear is one of the other things that can create an inflammatory response, and something that's very much linked to what you were talking about as far as obesity and cardiovascular dysfunction, are sleep disorders like sleep apnea. And so there's a strong link, and there's a lot of people who have sleep apnea and don't know it. So if for those people listening, if you have a spouse or a loved one who snores very loud or stops breathing at nighttime, this is already past the point of get checked out. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is, you know, we keep adding things that are the underlying causes, insulin resistance. Well, one of them is obstructive sleep apnea.
Yeah.
Is a result of underlying insulin resistance. Polycystic ovarian disease has now been shown to have an underlying insulin resistance. So when I get my patients down there on CPAP or, you know, have sleep apnea, I treat them this way. And I would say if they really go at it, 80, 90% get off their CPAP, it reverses it. My ladies who are having infertility because of polycystic ovarian disease, all of a sudden start having normal. But then you're starting to talk about other hormonal things. So that's my comment.
Yeah, and so you can see though how it all kind of goes together. So so when you talk about lifestyle changes, you're having it's like all of your specialized doctors getting to work together and potentially saying, do this, do this, do this, do this. But when you do lifestyle changes, it kind of can negate the need for all of that because it does clear up a lot of different things.
That's what we find. Yeah. Why not take a trial? You know, in early diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, all of this stuff, we should be offering our patients a trial of healthy lifestyles. And instead of using drugs as a first choice, it should be a last resort. Give them a chance. But the other thing I find, even if they don't improve as much as I want, they need less medication. And that's their best defense.
And that's a win right now. So moving forward, do you, and I'm going to make a comment at the end, because I was recently in a meeting with a group of doctors and people who are looking to change the healthcare system, I'm going to say, within the country. And so I have an analogy when it comes to insurance and the whole healthcare system. But do you foresee an actual change with our healthcare system model as it relates to heart disease and how we treat it coming?
I think there is, and there's a couple real keys. You know, insurance companies control what people do, but also does Medicare. And right now, Medicare, if you see before, we never had a diagnosis of insulin resistance or prediabetes or, you know, all of that. They didn't appreciate it. Now they do. You can put it down and it allows people to get counseling, and not like you and I do, but in diet and exercise through Medicare for up to 6 months and be paid for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to change medicine, you know, and if we can get, you know, it's all about prevention, but it's first step therapy, Troy. You got to understand, this is the first step to therapy. And if we would do it, they would not need second step therapy.
Yeah.
I would say in 80, 90% of the time, but that Medicare change really got me excited. That occurred about 8, 9 years ago. And I thought, oh, we're seeing a change, but it has to come from the insurance companies. They've got to pay for some of this counseling and stuff that we're doing.
Yeah. And so, let me just nail down that point, because there has to be a change. We know that. And a lot of people are starting to understand that lifestyle is needed, and to actually do it, to walk alongside you with what we do here. A lot of people always ask, well, does insurance cover it? So this is what I want to tell people. when does your car insurance cover your car? When there's been an accident or there's trauma? When does your house insurance cover you? When there's been an accident or damage? When does your medical insurance cover you? When there's been an accident, trauma, or damage to your system? So our insurance world is set up not to cover preventative. The insurance is not going to pay you to paint your walls, cut your lawn, and take care of your home. They're going to pay you when the hail damages your home. It's the same with our body. Insurance will never, at this point, the way it's set up, pay for prevention. We are hitting a tipping point, so something may shift with that. But I encourage people to save up and pour into their body like they do their house, like they do their car. You wash the car, you take care of the car, you change the oil, you pay for those things to prevent the damage from happening. Same with your home and your house. But we expect that not to be the case for our body. And we need to switch that, because it's like turning the Titanic. It's going to take a while to get that shift. Until then, start budgeting for your body to make the lifestyle changes so that you can afford to pay for them. And then hopefully avoid the need for insurance at all. And then if they end up changing it so that where there's some level of coverage, or they're making it cheaper and more affordable for people, then you'll be blessed to actually have that experience. But people have to kind of get it in their head that insurance will never cover health care. Disease care, yes, not health care.
Yeah. And Troy, just to do that is, you know, the most important and valuable asset we have is our health. And you and I are in the business. We're telling people they've lost their health to one extent or another every day in every office visit. And, you know, people need to learn. I need to spend some time, money, and effort protecting my health. But they say, if I'm going to spend that time, money, and effort, I want to know what I'm doing is clinically effective. And that's what you and I do.
Yep.
And so if I'm going to be proactive, I tell my patients, if you are not proactive in trying to protect your health, you are slowly losing your health. It's just a matter of time, because chronic disease is silent, and everybody wants to sit around and wait till they're sick and then go to the doctor, get on their knees. Oh, doctor, save me.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. We need to be doing it early and protecting it. My patients are not as concerned anymore about the years in their life as they are the quality of life in those years. So that's what we're into, but we die up for lack of knowledge. Everything they tell you in the medical community, the registered dietitians are eating, is all wrong.
Yep.
And so we teach you how to do it. It is not that hard, and it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
You just need to be, you just have to be wanting to protect your health and be more proactive.
Yep. And you'll be shocked. People are always shocked as they get healthier and become healthier, the ability to become disciplined and more disciplined actually goes with that. So it just requires going in the right direction, making some decisions to go in the right direction. And then once you see it and you believe it, you can achieve it is basically one of the things that we ultimately see.
I want to just share, I wrote a book years ago called Healthy for Life. And it was kind of out of print in that I just put it up on Amazon again as an ebook for $7.50. And I talk all about this, and it correlates with what you do, Troy. And just put in Dr. Ray Strand, Healthy for Life ebook, and you can go. And I'll tell you what, you'll just be amazed at what you've been taught and how it goes against everything. But what we find is when you start to eat right, and you don't set off this, you know, super cycle of glycemic stress or inflammation of that artery or overstimulation of insulin and insulin insensitivity, jeepers, you start feeling better. Your natural appetite comes down. The hormones come along. And then you add to it just some, you don't have to be a superstar, just modest exercise. And then we believe, Troy and I believe in nutritional supplements, that because they're part of a healthy lifestyle. They're not something you take to treat a disease. They're just part of a healthy lifestyle that's protecting your health.
Yeah. I have that book right on my shelf. I'm staring at it with about three or four of your other ones. So I love it. And I'll say this to you too. I have shared your book with a lot of the doctors. I'm getting a lot of attention from MDs in the hospitals and other facilities. And so they'll come and tour our facility and I show them your book. They go out, they buy it. They message me later saying, why haven't we been doing this for the last 20 years?
That's every, right.
Every time.
It's there. It's in the medical literature. I've got around 30 pages of references for the physicians. They're mainstream journals. I spent 3.5 years studying. Yeah. And researching the medical literature because it was personal to me because I had prediabetes and my patients, I was trying to help them. And this is where we started, Troy. And you go back, nothing's changed. It's still as current as it ever was.
Yep. Yes. Thankfully. Yep. Very, very thankful for that. Well, again, I want to just thank you for coming on and just blessing our listeners here and educating them. And we know we'll have you back with a new topic for those of you. Check out Dr. Strand's books on Amazon. You can also go to our website, officialsynapse.com. We have other information on our cardiometabolic programs as well, so that you can look into those. And if you are concerned about any type of endothelial damage, we do have the EndoPAT testing for a lot of people. We are working with a lot of long-haul COVID, a lot of vaccine injury, and a lot of cardiovascular compromise. So go ahead and check that out. A lot of educational videos, and just know that there is hope. There is a change for you. And we just thank you for your time. And we look forward to having you on again.
Great. Glad to be with you.
Thank you for listening to the Synapse Snips podcast. If you like what you heard, subscribe to the podcast and share the podcast. To learn more, check out our website at www.officialsynapse.com. Until next time, this has been Synapse Snips Podcast. We'll see you on the next episode. This podcast is for information purposes only and should under no circumstances be considered medical advice or a substitute for medical care. Any information given in this podcast is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease and is at the user's own risk. Please first consult a licensed healthcare professional.